$2 trillion in pandemic aid is on the way after Congress and the White House agree on a stimulus bill.
At last, we have a deal.
We'll explain what markets are looking for in the package, plus why many public health officials are preparing for pandemic impact that could last months, even years.
So we're looking at a long time that this virus is going to be, quite frankly, a big part of our lives.
It's Wednesday, March 25th. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. This is What's News. A $2 trillion stimulus package is coming to fight the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Talks went through the night, and it was only early this morning that the White House and Congress announced an agreement. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell spoke on the Senate floor.
At last, we have a deal. After days of intense discussions, the Senate has reached a bipartisan agreement on a historic relief package for this pandemic. It will rush new resources onto the front lines of our nation's healthcare fight, and it will inject trillions of dollars of cash into the economy as fast as possible to help American workers, families, small businesses, and industries make it through this disruption.
His Democratic counterpart Chuck Schumer said the original bill improved substantially after Democrats joined talks. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said President Trump is ready to sign it upon passage. We'll talk about market reaction later on. The Trump administration now says anyone leaving the New York metro area must self-isolate for 14 days. Coronavirus cases have risen sharply in the region. FEMA is shipping ventilators there. Governor Andrew Cuomo has criticized the Trump administration's response, saying the federal government should use the full force of the Defense Production Act to speed things up. He called for more ventilators.
You have 20,000 ventilators in the stockpile. Release the ventilators to New York. How can we be in a situation where you can have New Yorkers possibly dying because they can't get a ventilator, but a federal agency saying, I'm going to leave the ventilators in the stockpile?
Let's go abroad, where Spain has been suffering one of the fastest growing outbreaks of the coronavirus in the world, the deadliest after Italy and China, with around 3,000 deaths. Spain is on pace to surpass the death toll in China's Hubei province. Some experts blame Spain's spike in cases on a slow government response and public resistance to lockdowns. Spain's prime minister has rejected criticism that he reacted too late, arguing he followed the advice of scientific experts. Reporter Xavier Fondagloria in Barcelona explains how new moves aim to turn the tide.
People are now in Spain under a partial lockdown, meaning that you can go out to buy groceries or medicines, but also to go to work if your firm is still open. Sticking to the lockdown measures and social distancing has been a challenge for many Spaniards, but awareness has grown, and generally it is expected that the speed of contagion will at least slow down in some days.
India is telling all of its 1.3 billion people to stay home for 3 weeks. Prime Minister Narendra Modi ordered all non-essential government offices and private businesses to shut down. He added that the government is spending about $2 billion to buy more ventilators and coronavirus testing kits. Just after the break, explaining why this pandemic may be a very, very long fight. President Trump says that he hopes to have America reopened by Easter, but many public health officials say it will take much longer than 2 weeks to beat back the coronavirus pandemic. It could easily be months, and impact could remain for years. That's what our reporter Felice Solomon is covering from Singapore. Hello, Felice.
Hi.
So your story explains how the pandemic could likely end in three ways, potentially: a vaccine, a treatment, maybe reaching herd immunity. Quickly explain how long that might take to get to any of these solutions.
It might take a while. So herd immunity, which is when a significant portion of a population, possibly as many as half or more, has been infected and recovered. And this makes them less likely to be reinfected with the virus. And it also drastically slows transmission rates. There are different estimates of how long it would take to achieve herd immunity, but it can't happen quickly without a high human cost. Herd immunity basically would require a lot of people to get sick and then get better. If they all get sick at the same time, then there's not enough room in the hospitals to help people get through this. And frankly, a lot of people would probably die. Several experts we spoke to said the most realistic outcome in terms of getting this virus in check is going to be a vaccine. And they all agreed that that could take about a year or 18 months. There's one being tested on humans now in the U.S., but it's unclear how long it might take from start to finish to actually get everyone vaccinated. There's really no way to rush this process because it has to be completely safe. And the same goes for treatment. So right now, there is no cure. New drugs and therapies will have to be tested and make sure that they don't have any adverse effects. So we're looking at a long time that this virus is going to be, quite frankly, a big part of our lives.
What is it that you're hearing from public health officials that makes them think they need to be ready for this long, drawn-out fight, months, maybe years?
Well, in the case of Singapore, which is where I'm based, and I think what you're referring to in the article, officials have said last week that the protracted nature of this crisis is actually part of its solution. When officials talk about flattening the curve, they're talking about slowing the spread of the disease down to a more manageable pace. This means that there could be a high number of infections spread out over a long period of time so that health systems can save more people who are suffering from severe cases. This prolonged health crisis will be coupled with a prolonged economic strain for a few reasons. One is that a lot of resources are going into providing needed medical services. At the same time, the measures necessary to lessen the severity of the health crisis are economically damaging. For instance, movement restrictions keep people from work. There's less retail and other regular economic activity. But like we said earlier, there's just no magic wand. If we did nothing, we'd have an even bigger problem on our hands.
And there's the chance that that economic strain could cause some public health problems of its own. Like, what are researchers worried about in that sense?
The drastic measures that some governments are taking, such as city and statewide lockdowns, type border controls, have been quite a shock to the system. Experts say that measures like social distancing may be necessary for prolonged periods, though we'll need to come up with ways to do them that work for our society. In the U.S. and elsewhere, businesses will be strained. People will lose jobs and income. Many will also lose their health insurance. So there's a bit of a negative feedback loop. In addition to economic hardship, the effects of sudden prolonged isolation can cause a lot of problems. So experts are worried about things like depression, possibly drug and alcohol dependency, maybe even suicides. So because a lot is changing for a lot of people very quickly, there could be some serious psychological impacts.
And there was some sense of excitement or maybe hope when China lifted some of its lockdown measures. But I know that some of the experts that you've talked to are worried that there could be a resurgence of the virus there or in other countries that seem to have some bit of success in getting it under control. What's the concern they have?
Well, for one, immunity is still low, even in places where this virus has spread widely. So there are still a whole lot of people who can get this virus. The concern is that if we go back to the way things were before, with a lot of travel, dense social spaces, and so on, that we're sort of reopening the valve. Scientists don't know for sure whether things like temperature and humidity will affect this virus. Some pathogens are less transmissible in warmer climates, but we just don't know yet. There's also been, as you said, an uptick of cases in places like Hong Kong and Singapore, which have so far kept the spread at bay. This is in part due to people coming back from other places where the border controls came into force, but increasingly there have been more cases of local transmission. So the fear is that if we become complacent and the physical conditions are right for this virus to thrive, it could just come roaring back.
Felice Solomon reporting from Singapore. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Right after this short break, we'll get market reaction to the stimulus deal. Asian markets closed up and European shares began the day higher. This follows news that the White House and Congress reached a deal overnight on a pandemic stimulus package. Ahead of that announcement, Wall Street surged in anticipation, with the Dow rising 11% to rack up its biggest one-day gain since 1933. Here's our markets editor Quentin Webb on how Wall Street will be looking at this deal today.
Well, markets were looking for three things, to put it very simply, really. One was that, you know, they wanted something that was big, and this definitely is big. $2 trillion is about a tenth of the size of the U.S. economy. Second, they wanted the US to move fast because, you know, it's much better to aim at prevention rather than cure. You want to keep people in their jobs. You want to keep companies afloat. You don't want to kind of mop up the damage after things go wrong. And the third thing is they wanted coordination. So both the kind of fiscal policy and monetary policy from the central bank moving in the same direction. And there is here some useful overlap with what the Federal Reserve is doing. You know, so I think probably actually we saw yesterday this very big rally in the US, and that was sort of as this fiscal stimulus package sort of became closer to fruition. That continued in Asia overnight, and we saw, in fact, as you know, the White House and Senate leaders reached a deal, markets kind of pushed up a little bit further. So we are already seeing some sort of welcoming of this. Now, there's a lot of detail, of course, still to be thrashed out, but this is sort of incrementally a positive development.
Finally, you may remember that we are still very much in the middle of a presidential campaign, even though the pandemic has complicated primary voting, disappeared a debate audience, and closed campaign rallies. And there's a new sign that the Democratic contest will continue. The spokesman for Bernie Sanders said the candidate plans to debate Joe Biden in April if the contest is held. Recently, Sanders said relatively little about the status of his campaign since Biden's latest string of victories. He faces long odds given Biden's lead. Sanders would likely have to win big in every remaining state to seize the nomination. And that is What's News for this morning. An updated podcast will be out this evening, and we will keep covering the pandemic and other stories on WSJ.com and our app. I'm Mark Garrison with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.